Hello, fellow risk takers, and welcome to my worst investment ever. Stories of loss to keep you winning. This is an interesting episode because I found one of my recent interviews fascinating. So fascinating that I ordered his book online and have been through the book called Non-Food Franchising. And his name is John Austinson. And if you want to learn more about him, you can go to episode 815, where he talks about how I built a million-dollar business that never made a profit, and that was his worst investment ever. It was a fascinating one for me because he revealed some things that, you know, that it's hard to scale a business, as an example, and how do we standardize and yet still get all the revenue that we need. Now, John is the founder and CEO of FranBridge Consulting, a two-time Inc. 5000 company, and he is a top 1% franchise consultant. And as I mentioned, he's written the book Non-Food Franchising, which is a great way. It's, you know, it's not an overwhelming read. It's a great way to understand what he's talking about. So, John, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Andrew, appreciate you having me back. Excited to be here.
Yeah, I was just so fascinated because, you know, I've started a few businesses, let's say, it's about four or five, maybe one was like, yeah, almost nothing, but let's say four businesses and two of them survived and two of them have, you know, made and are making good money and are growing relatively well. But it was a brutal road to get to this point. When I listened to our conversation before about franchising, I started thinking, yeah, you know, I've always seen franchise going on, but I never really got it. And maybe just for a moment, tell us about kind of, you know, what you're doing and, you know, why you're so darn interested in franchising before we get into the top 10 franchise opportunities for 2026.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like many of your listeners, you know, I spent many years in the corporate world and always wanted to be an entrepreneur. And I know a lot of your listeners are entrepreneurs, you know, they have their small businesses, you know, but never had that million-dollar idea and really didn't have franchising on the radar until some providential circumstances and had the opportunity to come in and run a large franchise system and really fell in love with the franchise model. You know, had that light bulb moment where I saw all these diverse backgrounds coming around together under a shared system. Prior to that, I thought of franchising as just being fast food. But there's this whole world of opportunities, which we'll dig into in a minute, that exist outside of food. And so now, in addition to owning franchises myself, I also consult and help others that are looking to get in the game, identify the top opportunities for them that are looking to grow in their market, entirely free to work with us. I'm essentially a real estate broker, but for franchises, so we simply get a referral fee. Very clean model. Love what we do. Love that we've gotten to help so many, you know, would-be entrepreneurs become small business owners.
Yeah. And, you know, I was looking at in your book, and towards the end, you talked about long-term strategies. And, you know, one of the ones that I thought was fascinating is complementary portfolio. So maybe you can just talk, what do you mean, what's attractive for a person considering a franchise as a complementary portfolio?
Absolutely. You know, a couple of examples to illustrate that. I had a client that was a real estate broker here in Atlanta, very successful, had built a team, and he wanted to start a property management business. He got tired of referring people out to third parties. And so he came to me and said, John, should I start my own property management business or should I get into a franchise? Would that be a better path? And, you know, I introduced him to some of the top players in the market. He eventually chose to go with one of them. And his feedback was, hey, it just shortcuts our path to success, right? I mean, could we do this ourselves? Maybe. But hey, why not step in where we already have a technology stack? We already have the marketing ready to go. We already have the training for our team. It just shortcuts the path. You know, another example would be clients of ours in Boise, Idaho, that bought an in-home senior care business. You know, those are very high in demand these days, right? And several months in, they came back and said, hey, what's a complimentary business? And I introduced them to one that they eventually went with that provided wheelchair ramps and stair lifts and bathroom retrofitting, allowing people to age in place in their homes. Great complement to their core business.
Mm. Yeah, that's fascinating. And when I think about that complimentary, I have two examples in my own life. One is they're not franchises, but they could have been or still could be. One of them is I have, you know, a coffee business and we sell coffee to hotels, restaurants, coffee shops, so B2B. And recently we found a great water supplier out of Sweden and it's called Blue Water. And it's an incredible water filtration system that then allows you to add back minerals through an app to get kind of the perfect water for espresso. So when you think about coffee business, you know, we roast coffee, but you got to have a machine to make the espresso. you got to have water, right? You need to have a barista or at least someone to push a button if it's an automated machine. And so this just gave us one more complementary thing. And just as a side note, we also previously went into flavors and we realized it's not really complementary for us. We want to be focused on core coffee products. And that water is one example of a complementary. The other one is that I have been doing advising. I work with a firm and I give an investment portfolio to that firm. And then they vet it and they bring it out as an advisory firm to their clients. But what I realize is that the strategies that I'm developing, I could also create mutual funds on the back of that, you know, and use that. And so then I've expanded into what is a complementary aspect. So let's just talk briefly about this concept of complementary a little bit more. Because yeah, I want people to think, you know, like think beyond what you're doing right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think one of the things I love about franchising is the optionality it gives you, right? You can expand through complementing your current business or your current franchise. A lot of our clients will also look to diversify and, you know, go with something totally different. And they start to build these organizations. You know, I've got a client that is the largest franchisee of Two Minute a Truck, you know, operates a $45 million business across 12 markets. But every year or two, he comes to me and says, "Hey, John, I've got this young guy in my organization that I want to promote. What franchise do you like for him?" You know, and I'll introduce him to some ideas and he'll go with one and give that guy a piece of the cap table and let him run with it. You know, and he's just had a great track record. And so he's attracting great talent to his organization because he's creating these career paths for them within. So a lot of different ways, you know, one of the things I like about franchising too is several years in, you may look around and say, "I want to expand, but I've got franchisees all around me. I'm kind of landlocked." Well, you're going to get first dibs on anyone that's potentially selling. Allow another franchisee to have an exit, allow you to expand, or vice versa, right? And so that it's what I call internal M&A, that you get essentially first line of sight into potential deal flow within a business that you already understand. So yeah, a lot of different ways, but no, from a complementary standpoint, you know, I love seeing different ideas come together. And you know, sometimes it's complementary from a customer standpoint, you know, from an industry standpoint. Sometimes it may just be complementary from a personnel standpoint on the back end, or maybe you have a shared home office that's supporting a pool cleaning business and a roofing business. I wouldn't call those complementary necessarily, but on the back end, they're a lot of the same admin functions, right?
Interesting. And then last thing I'll mention about the book is let's talk briefly about diversified portfolio, because let's imagine that you're in a business and you're thinking, "I'm not that confident about the future." I have one of my clients and they sometimes say to me, "We're afraid AI is going to destroy our business area." Let's talk about the concept of using franchise to diversify your investments.
Absolutely. You know, we have that conversation every day, every couple hours. The drumbeat's getting so loud around AI these days. You know, I talk with clients that own technology firms or marketing agencies, consultants. A marketing agency I used to use personally is now coming to me saying, "Hey, we're tired of doing this. We're ready to get into franchising." So it is fascinating to see the dynamics at play. But in some cases, they are looking to keep that day job or their current business, and they're looking to add another revenue stream. Now, I never want to sugarcoat it. I tell them if business ownership is easy, everyone would be doing it. So it does take work to start another revenue stream, but it also takes having a good operator, you know. Mm-hmm. For franchising, if you have a good operator, if you've got a good franchisor on the sidelines supporting that operator, it does allow you to continue with your main focus and not have to carry that daily support water for your operator.
Yeah. I have this cool device on my computer, but I don't know if it works. So I'm going to just test it for a second to see. I'm going to try to press a button and see if any sound comes across. Tell me if you hear anything. Nope. Okay. All that time, I thought I had it figured out, but don't have it. All right. I was going to give a round of applause after each one of the 10, but let's get started. Let's get into it. And let's get started with the first one you want to talk about of the top 10 franchise opportunity for 2026.
Gosh, you know, picking a top 10 is like picking your favorite kids, right? So there's so many directions I could go with this, but, you know, we'll start out. A lot of those that we work with have a B2B background. That's just very common. And, you know, within franchising, I'd say B2C is a little more common just from how many opportunities you have in that bucket versus, you know, B2B, business to business. But we'll start out with a couple of B2B ones that we like. And this is a business that can actually be run without any employees, you know, which is beautiful, right? But it's a cost mitigation business. So you're working with small and medium-sized companies, helping them reduce their cost, entirely no cost to them to bring you in, but you're coming in, evaluating their invoices, looking at their vendor agreements. And the value that you're able to provide is A, you've been trained in knowing where to look for cost savings and kind of how to benchmark their cost versus what the industry, what they should be paying. And then you're also able to leverage on the back end the buying power of all these small companies now and give them that collective buying power. So you're able to come back with some prescriptive recommendations. They then pay you a percentage of those savings on an ongoing basis.
You know, there's a publicly listed company that I would say in some ways is like that. It's called Fastenal in the US, and they embed themselves in your inventory system and then take it over. And then they dig out every single possible cost savings that they could find. So that is fascinating. And the person who is doing that, if you decide to do that franchise, you would be trained by, what do you call it? The franchisor.
Franchisor.
Yep.
Exactly. You'd be trained, and they would also handle a lot of the analysis on the back end as well. So it's a little more of a sales type role. So if someone has that B2B sales background, this could be a great fit for them. And there's something like 25 different categories of cost that they know how to go in and analyze. So very holistic.
Incredible. And I already like that one for myself, selfishly. So there's number one, the cost mitigation business. What would you say is number two? Not in any particular order, but you know.
Yeah, we'll stick with the themes here of, you know, we'll look at two more in the B2B services yep. arena, just knowing those are popular. So this next one is what I would call freight brokerage. If you're a small or medium-sized company, oftentimes if you do a lot of shipping, you know, with DHL or FedEx or UPS, you're calling a 1-800 number. Where this company comes in is they kind of stand in between you and the carrier. So you're still using those carriers, but now you've got someone that, again, is able to provide better pricing because of the collective buying power that they're able to leverage. They're also able to be consultative and prescriptive because they become the subject matter experts in all things shipping. So you're their go-to shipping contact. You've got the technology allowing, you know, just very streamlined operations. And of course, there's more complexity to all this than I'm making it sound yeah. easy, right? There's sure. complexity on the back end, but no, it's one that we're really excited about. Started in the UK, sold out in the UK, entered the US this past year, and we just placed some clients in Texas and expect this one to grow really fast.
And so if you were doing this freight brokerage business, you would basically go to people who are doing a lot of shipping and freight, you know, and you'd say, I got an easier solution for you. You know, you're doing all this calling and talking to all these different people, trying to manage these relationships. And what do you know about? You don't know anything about them or anything about what opportunities are there. We're experts in that. Give it to us. And then we can not only take a lot of trouble and time off your hands, but we can also bring down your costs.
You'd be a great sales guy.
Oh, man.
You got it. You nailed it.
Okay, that's an interesting one, too. I was wondering how interesting they would be, and I think they are interesting so far.
Well, great. Well, hopefully we'll keep that theme going. All right, so number three, the last one in this B2B services arena, is one that provides digital billboards. So that's a fancy way of saying TV screens, advertising screens. You know, you see these in your doctor's offices. You see them in your oil change, you know, locations. I mean, everywhere, right? And it's entirely free in this case for the business owner to have that installed in their location. It provides some entertainment to, you know, to their customers as they're waiting for appointments. But then businesses are paying you to be shown on the screen, right? So you're really, it's just local advertising 101. Great model around that. Again, you don't need a large team, a little more sales oriented, just like the last two were as well. So yeah, very clean model. All three of these businesses you can get into for around $100,000 or even less. Is that from a franchising standpoint, that's on the low end for sure. You don't need infrastructure. You don't need a retail location. This is work remote, scale it at your own pace, but all the technology, a lot of the training, the lead generation, all that kind of support's on there from the franchisor.
And for the digital billboards, what's coming from the franchisor? You're buying the actual devices and then they're bringing their expertise on how to program them, or how does that work, or how to sell them?
Exactly. So there would be the training component, there would be the procurement, again, buying in bulk of the actual product, the TVs, and then they're handling a lot of the administrative, you know, pieces around the streaming of the ads.
So right there, if you said, oh, I'll do it on my own, well, yeah, you're going to have to go out and pay a pretty high price for each one of those versus working with this franchisor who can provide you, you know, a much lower price and all the support that you need.
And Andrew, you'll appreciate this. Another value, one day when you go to sell your business, there's been research done that's shown that franchises trade at a higher multiple than non-franchises in most cases. It's like a 1.5 multiple in non-food franchises. So there's value from a potential buyer as well.
That's page 38, and that is the reference you make to John P. Hayes, David Smith, and Mary Kay Copeland's research at the Rinker School of Business faculty. And the conclusion they came up with after examining 2,159 business resales over a 10-year period, the researchers found that the franchise businesses sold at a 1.5 times multiple higher than non-franchise businesses. So if you thought you were going to sell your business for $1 million, if it was a franchise, you could sell it for $1.5 million. That's the research. I want to get that paper and look at it myself and try to understand a little bit more about that, because that, to me, is one of the biggest things. Because, you know, it's a little bit like people ask me, why didn't you buy a condo in Bangkok? Foreigners are allowed to buy a condo. There's lots of beautiful condos. And I said, look, if you want to buy a good condo in Bangkok, the minimum you're going to spend is $500,000. But you probably need closer to $1 million. Now, I'm going to put down $1 million, let's say. And let's just say that I rent it. And I rent it for a yield of, after all the expenses into that, I rent it for a yield of, let's just say 5%. Net yield I get is 5% per year, which is pretty impressive, in my opinion, after all the costs and the agents and all that. Then I bought it for $1 million. The question is, what am I going to sell it for? In 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, in many, many cases, you're never going to sell it for more than what you bought it for. Mm. But in the stock market, it's almost assured. Not only, I don't have to buy just one stock. I can buy a diversified portfolio of stocks rather than buying one condo. I could take that $1 million or $500,000, put it in a diversified portfolio, and the probability that I could earn, let's say, a 3% or 2% dividend yield is high. And that I could sell it for some sort of capital gain that would give me 5 to maybe 8% total average annual return over that period of time. So I'm going to get, let's say, a total return of 10% on that money. And it's just, I just don't see any way. But it's the same thing with business. Most people start up their business, and I see them at the tail end of it where they realize we can't get a lot of value for this business. And that's not the case for franchises. So that's why I find this, you know, one of the many angles of fascination.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's well said. And I love that you had the reference there. You're the perfect wingman, Andrew. I love hanging out with you. But let me say this. Not every franchise is created equal. So I never want to make a blanket statement, right? You know, there are franchises, there's several thousand, right? So just like any industry, you're going to have players that don't do a great job, that don't provide great support, right? And that's unfortunate, but it is what it is. But then there are ones that provide great support. And that's where we come in and try to help identify those. So again, I just want to make sure I don't make blanket statements from my end implying, you know, everything.
Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of mess everywhere. That's part of why we make excess money when we are entrepreneurs, you know, because we kind of sort through that mess. All right, we're now at number four, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's switch gears to the senior industry. You know, we've been talking about people turning 65, I think 10,000 turning 65 every day. We've been saying that for probably a decade now. Well, they continue to get older, right? And so we'll hit on two here. And, you know, when you think seniors, you think of in-home senior care, right? And there are a lot of large players in that space. We've placed a lot of clients with in-home senior care. But to take two different approaches to it, one, there's a business that we actually just signed a client with today that provides stretching and fitness for seniors in senior placement facilities. So you'll come in, provide the programming, you know, once or twice or three times a week on a regular basis, recurring revenue. It's great, right? But you send your trainers in there that have been trained, and they go in and work with the seniors. Yeah, so you're helping the community. It's a feel-good business, and there's money to be had in it.
Mm. Yeah, and you know, when you think about the senior locations, they probably struggle to find somebody that's, you know, able to do proper stretching and fitness and, you know, that's safe and, you know, that's careful. Right. I look at my mom and I think, you know, for 2026, one of my goals at the age of 87, she is right now, is probably more stretching. And it's hard to, it takes a lot of time. You can't go at it hard. You know, you've got to go slow and steady. And very few people understand that. I had a therapist even that came in and did something very quickly with my mom and caused an injury that she still suffers from today. So having someone that's truly, you know, skilled in that area is very valuable. All right. So that's stretching and fitness on location.
On location, right. But again, a mobile business, you don't need a physical location. And this next one, same way. This next one, you would need some sort of industrial, like small footprint, you know, for receiving product and such. But it's a business that, I'll give you a little more context around it. It provides wheelchair ramps, stair lifts, it retrofits the home, the bathrooms, you know, for mobility. Solutions allowing people to age in place. A lot of times they don't want to go to the senior center until the very end, right? They'd rather live at home. And so this one really allows them to do that from a mobility standpoint. And it's brand new. They just started the business recently. But the reason I have confidence in it is because the leadership team has 28 years of experience in the industry. The founder I know extremely well. He built a very large business in this exact same industry, took all those experiences and know-how and best practices and now put them into a new business that has open territories. The other one was completely sold out in the US, and now you've got open territories, just a large addressable market, you know, potential for owners to do well into the seven figures based on his prior experiences.
I have two words for him. Yeah. Reverse mortgage.
That's right.
And my sister is a leader in reverse mortgage in Maine. And she's been doing it for a long time, and she understands it very well. But that's the whole challenge that people are faced with as they get older is, I want to live in my home as long as I possibly can. And a reverse mortgage is a real commitment to say, I am committed to being in this home. I'm not going to sell it and move to another location or move into a... And so there you have that commitment, and that would be the perfect opportunity for someone to say, and we're going to make it safer. And, you know, we're going to help you. Yeah, I just think about the things in the bathroom that help make it easier. And so, you know, all of that. So reverse mortgages are my two words for that one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a needs-based business right here. You know, this isn't something like, hey, you know, it's not trendy. It's not going out of fashion, right? So, well, let's fast forward to the health and wellness. I'd say of all the categories, this is probably the most fashion forward. You know, you do have some that will go or along with trends. However, I'd say when you look at the longevity movement and where we are and where it's projected to be an $8 trillion industry, $8 trillion worldwide over the next 48 months, according to UBS. They put some research out on that. But the first one we'll look at is Pilates. And there's actually two concepts that I really like in Pilates, and they're not Club Pilates. Pilates helped create the industry. Now we've got two second movers. Very experienced teams behind them, one that was actually part of Club Pilates. So I can't pick a favorite between these two because I like them a lot, but they're both modern Pilates. Great way of approaching it. Some proprietary elements to each business as far as the equipment goes. And, you know, if you're a Pilates junkie, then you would appreciate those differences. But the Pilates market was projected at $140 billion worldwide last year. It's projected to grow to $450 billion to $500 billion worldwide over the next 8 or 9 years. So massive industry that's got a lot of momentum and a lot of room for growth. And so we really like both of those. The other one in the health and wellness space, we had a client just have a grand opening in. He bought five locations of this business. I got to attend the grand opening. It was an awesome experience, but it's recovery modalities. So sauna, cold plunge, you know, cryotherapy, the red light beds, compression. They've got some injectables as well, all under one roof. So you see a lot of concepts out there that provide one or two things, but this provides them all under a membership model, and it has just been growing really fast across the U.S. Again, a lot of people are doing multi-location plays. That's a heavier investment. You're talking more about like $500,000 to get into one of those versus some of these service-based businesses that are more like, you know, $100,000, $150-ish. So a lot of interest there.
It's interesting because I watched the progression happen in Bangkok. Originally, there was really no, you know, when you look at a developing country, everybody's pretty fit because they're farming rice and they're growing stuff and they are laboring and they're building and they're in that building phase. And so we didn't really have much in the way of fitness and stuff. And then all of a sudden we got our first yoga studio. And I used to go to that yoga studio and many, many years ago. And then all of a sudden we got flooded with yoga studios because what do you need? You need a floor and a mat. You know, and so all of a sudden people moved into Pilates because they, okay, well, capital investment is a little bit of a barrier to entry here with Pilates. But then we see a lot of those guys that were struggling to do the yoga ended up getting funding and launched Pilates, and they're having various different levels of success. But what is it from a franchise perspective that would make it better for someone who's saying, I love the Pilates angle, I want to do more of that? Why would a franchise add value to you if you were considering that?
Yeah, everything from, I mean, really soup to nuts, from the build out at the very beginning, because most people have never built out a retail space, right? And so the design, the build out, very turnkey, they're handling a lot of that for you. Well, really site selection even before that. And then from a launch, you know, oftentimes you have a membership base ready day one because you've done all the pre-launch sales. So again, they're doing a lot of the training, they're running a lot of the marketing that's driving those sales. You know, sometimes they'll even be on site helping with those sales, you know, but then they've got merchandise, they've got all the systems set up, you know, the POS system, you know, the apps. It's just, could you do this on your own? Yes. Would it take a lot longer? And would you probably spend a whole lot more money through trial and error? You also have an optimized marketing data set day one. They know how to launch these locations, so they know what works, what doesn't. So you're able to step
Pilates,
in.
But you don't like business. That's probably the likelihood of what's happening in most cases. And so you go into Pilates because you love Pilates, and then you realize, oh my God, there is so much I have to know and learn. And now you're on a 10-year learning curve. Maybe you don't have the runway to even survive that. And so you end up crashing. Whereas here, yeah, you love Pilates, but you need to partner with someone who loves the business of Pilates. And so, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And in a lot of cases, it's people that, you know, they just want to make money. You know, they may or may not love Pilates. A lot of our clients aren't passionate about what they're getting into. They eventually become passionate. Yep. They become passionate about helping people. It's not the vehicle that gets, you know, and so some people say, I've got to be passionate. Others say, hey, we're good. We'll sell a bunch of, you know, porta potties if we make $2 million doing it.
Yeah. And I think that's where also there's many Pilates studios that can get crushed by someone that comes in and says, I'm not like a Pilates expert. What I am is a business expert, a sales and marketing expert, a customer experience expert, a follow-up expert. I'm all of those things. And Pilates is just a vehicle to implement all these great things that I am good at. And that is hard to beat. And that when all that's rolled up in a franchise, then yeah, I can see that value. Where are we at in numbers now? What's our latest number? What was that?
Yeah, so we just knocked out number 6 and 7. So we're moving on to number 8.
Exciting.
Yeah, I thought we'd hit 2 in the kids space. People will always spend on their kids no matter what the economy is, right? And so the first one is really the only franchise I'm aware of that provides music lessons. Now, this is a retail location, but it's a small footprint, all an investment. You're between $250,000, $300,000. And you know, there are ways to fund this. Andrew, like we've talked about before, you know, SBA loans are very common, or retirement plan rollovers through what's called the ROBS program. There are different ways to get involved. It's not all cash. Mm-hmm. But yeah, one that provides music lessons. I love the founders. I've gotten to know them well. They started with, you know, 4 or 5 studios and now been selling locations all across the U.S. And, you know, it's really not hard to staff these. It's, if you're anywhere near a local college, they probably have a music program and you're bringing in these part-time instructors, you know, kids from those colleges. And again, a community benefiting business, and you know, can make some pretty good money as well.
Again, you feel like, the barriers to entry are so low. Just, you know, somebody's going to come along and say, oh, I love music and I love teaching music and my uncle has this space and I'm going to use it and I'm going to start teaching. And all of a sudden, you could have 3 of those people pop up and compete with you in this. Why is it the smartest thing to do this as a franchise?
Yeah, well, and I would ask how many, at least here in the U.S., how many music instructors have you seen open up their own studios, right? I mean, usually they need a place to go. And so I think creating that space, it's almost like a shared office space or a shared salon space, right? Which are also both franchise concepts. So it's creating the space. And, you know, it's not rocket science at the end of the day. But again, there's a program that they follow, a lesson curriculum. Someone may be a music student, but they don't know how to, you know, what are those first steps in training a 7-year-old? You know, my daughter's taking piano lessons and, you know, I've kind of seen it firsthand. So could you do it yourself? Possibly so. And that's a question you always want to ask when you're going through the franchise exploration process is, what value am I getting from the franchise, or is this something I should go do for myself? So again, you know, with that, they're providing a lot of the marketing. They do have the technology systems, things that you could piece together yourself. It would just take longer and there may be more trial and error.
Yeah. When I think about Thailand in particular, about 50 years ago, we had almost very little hospitals. You know, they were mainly government run hospitals. So, but what we had was clinics, and every doctor basically had his own clinic. And then we had some hospitals, private hospitals set up. And what they did is they gave a space. They created a space for doctors to say, why are you sitting at your clinic? You know, come here and work with us full time, part time, whatever you want. We're going to give you a little room that is your office, and you set your times when you want to meet patients. We get the flow of patients, that'll be endless, you know, as many as you want to see. Yeah, you're not going to make as much as you may think you're making in your clinic, but are you really making that in your clinic? Look at all the trouble you have to hire the admin, the computer systems, the this, that. You got to do the marketing. And all of a sudden, these doctors just flocked out of clinics and into those hospitals where they created this space to have their clinic on site, basically. So I can see that concept of creating the space for music teachers for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. The other one I thought I'd mention in the kids space is teen driving school. Now in 35 U.S. states, 35 of the 50.
Wait, teens are teaching how to drive?
No. They're being taught, or they should be being taught, we'll hope. But in a lot of states, you know, the majority of states, there are actually requirements that teens go through a driving school to be able to get their licenses. So, however, it's a very fragmented space, very low sophistication out there. Some schools teach it, some don't. The feedback we've received is, oh, our community could totally use something like that. And so there's certainly no large branded player out there for the most part, right, that's doing it well. So, you know, great franchise guys behind this one, you know, they have a lot of experience. That's something I like to see in newer brands is not only industry experience, but also franchise experience on that team. They've been there, done that, supported successful franchisees and prior ventures. So, you know, I like this one a lot and see a lot of potential and they're getting a lot of attention.
That, I guess, is when you think about that, that could be for a person that says, I know everybody in my town and, you know, my town's got 10,000 people in it, 100,000, whatever that number is. And this franchise provides me an opportunity to set up a little business that does something and generates income for my town. I may not be interested necessarily in expanding to the next town and the next town and the next town, but this could give me a plug and play that I can go in and dominate this one space in my town. Would that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. No, and the franchisor is going to run a lot of the digital marketing. They'll be producing collateral. But yeah, anything that you're able to do to, you know, sponsor the Little League baseball team or get involved in the Chamber of Commerce or, you know, form those natural referral connections. I mean, that's business 101, right? That's great. And you can always tag on businesses to this, whether it be, you know, we've had clients do really well in youth soccer, like really well in that space. There's a lot of adjacencies, I think, that you can tag on once you have that customer base.
Yeah, and if any parent ever heard the story of my old-time best friend Dave, who said that his driving instructor would smoke weed with him while he was driving. This was back in, you know, 1979 or whatever. You think, yes, I would like some vetting done in my teen driving school, please, please.
You taught my story. My guy fell asleep, but I don't think he was smoking weed.
So. Yeah. I don't want my kid smoking weed with the guys trying to teach him how to drive. Yes, please. Thank you. None of that. So is that number 10?
That was number 8. So we'll hit these last two real fast.
Okay, yep.
Okay, home and property services has probably been the most popular area over the last 5 years. A lot of private equity getting involved, a lot of smart money flowing in, just understandable cash flow in businesses. And there's so many options I could share here, but you know, two that I'll hit on real fast. One is a flooring business, the proprietary product, proprietary process, where they come in and they can refinish hardwood floors in a day without having to sand them, which is mind blown for those that have hardwood floors like myself. The other business is junk hauling. Now, there's some other large brands and franchising in the junk hauling space. 1-800-GOT-JUNK as an example, right? They help create that industry. But junk hauling is a $10 billion industry. There's a lot to go around. For the most part, it's pretty unsophisticated. This is a company that does things very differently. They actually charge by weight versus by volume. Well, you pay at the dump site by weight. So it makes sense to charge by weight, but no one else does that or can do it. So they've got a patented component of their truck that actually weighs everything. And they're able to provide estimates over the phone of what it's going to cost. And so in-house call center, all very technology-based differentiator. When they move to a weight-based model, this company, they increase their gross margin from the low 40% range to close to 70%. So it was a game changer, and now they're offering it as a franchise. I know the founder will think highly of their team and excited to get behind that one.
And that's no junk.
That's no junk. So we could talk all day about dumpsters. People love dumpsters. People love pets. There's so many. You and I can do this all day. But yeah, there are 10 right there to help get people leaning in.
Yeah, that's the fascinating, you know, the junk hauling one. And, you know, it's just more and more regulation going to be put in place of what you can do and can't do and all that. And when you look at countries also, you know, outside of the U.S., there's a whole upgrade that's happening, you know, in a lot of countries around the world in this space. And let's say you can, one of the interesting things is you can look ahead and say the trends that are happening in the U.S. for people that are non-US can look at these trends and say, okay, I can pretty much predict that's going to come to Thailand as an example. What franchise opportunity would give me the ability to enter that now so that I'm prepared? It could be 10 years before, but I've got family, kids, whatever, and I want to build this over a long period of time. So that's another kind of angle from, let's say, non-US or non-developed markets. That's what I see. All right. Is there anything that you want to add before we wrap up to this great list?
No, that was so much fun. Appreciate you having me back. And again, we could probably do this with another 10 sometimes. It's a fun conversation. And yeah, love our interactions. You ask great questions. So yeah, excited about what's going on in the world of franchising. Certainly, if we can help any of your listeners, again, entirely free to work with us. I'd encourage people to pick up our book, Non-Food Franchising, just by coming out to our website, franbridgeconsulting.com. I'm always happy to jump on a call if I can help in any way.
Fantastic. And we'll have links to all that in the show notes. So, you know, reach out. This is, to me, a lot of interesting things. In fact, my last question is, how do you not get yourself invested in as many of these as possible? Like, some of them are just so tempting when you look at, and I just love the niche aspect of really focusing in. I'm just curious for yourself, what is your strategy for investing or franchise, or what is it that, do you ever get tempted into these things? And when you do, you know, how do you do that investment?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm invested in 4 franchises currently, 3 in the property services arena, 1 in the health and wellness, you know, everything from asphalt paving and line striping to a business that provides temporary walls, containment walls around renovation projects, construction sites. I kind of like those non-sexy industries, you know, but I've got good partners and they're overseeing most of the operations. So I'm more advisory at this stage, more capital partner from an involvement standpoint. But no, I'm an all of the above investor. Andrew, I invest a lot in real estate, oil and gas, crypto, certainly the public markets. I believe that business ownership and in particular franchising has a place in most people's portfolio. You know, there's tax benefits that go with it. The government incentivizes it. So again, that's another conversation for another day, but I believe it's all of the above, not either or.
Okay, and my last question for today, and that is, we've talked about how if you were to get a franchise and run it for 10 years, you know, whatever, and then sell it, you have a much more higher likelihood of selling it at a higher price than if you had done that on your own. But let's just briefly talk about the idea of, yeah, sometimes you need capital partners. You need capital to grow. You know, sometimes you may have other types of partners that come in. Now, if you are a business owner who's never done business before, and you've got to deal with the issue of how do I get a partner? What contracts do I need in place? How do we exit this or complete this relationship if things go well, if things go poorly? Where does franchise fit in kind of navigating that very tricky area of the cap table?
Yeah, no, partnerships are great till they're not, right? I've had good partners, I've had bad ones. So I'm not an attorney, but I'm always happy to share my experiences. And, you know, I've seen a lot with clients of ours as well. Partnerships are very, very common in franchising, and it would operate just very much like a small business, you know, outside of franchising. And you'd have an operating agreement, and, you know, that would kind of spill out who owns what equity, what they're putting into it, who's got, you know, voting rights or what have you. I always encourage people to include the revolver clause, which essentially, you know, it's a buy-sell clause. If ever you guys come to an impasse, one can offer to buy out the other one, and that person can then buy them out at that same price. So it kind of keeps you honest on what you're offering. So yeah, there are little things I've learned along the way, but no, partnerships are very common in franchising, oftentimes a capital partner and an operating partner.
And when you go to sell, let's say, and sell a franchise, how difficult is that to sell it? Let's say you've done, you know, you got an area, you've done well in that area, you've followed all the guidelines, you've done it well, you've earned a lot out of it, and you want to go to sell it. How difficult or easy is it to sell that?
I mean, certainly depends on the business, the market, a lot of variables. But then your first option is going to be to sell to another franchisee in the system, right? You put the word out there, who wants to expand. That happens. Most resales never hit the open market because another franchisee will buy them. It's been my experience. Secondly, you know, if no one wants to buy it for whatever reason, then you can put it on bizbuysell.com. You know, website gets a lot of eyes. You can use a local business broker. You can have the brand offer it to the broker networks out there. So yeah, there's a lot of ways to get eyeballs on it. You know, the cheapest, most efficient way would be to have another franchisee, you know, buy it from you. And technically the franchisor has to approve that buyer, but it's in their interest to have the continuity of the business. And as long as you're not selling it to some knucklehead, you know, they'll in most cases approve the person.
Yeah, and that's just a good reason why you want to keep good relationships with the other franchisees around and you're going to get to know them. In some cases, there may be an active group that you get to know them so that when it comes time, you know, you think, 5 years from now, I'm going to be out of this. And you say to a couple of them, hey, not right now, but, you know, 5 years from now, let's talk. And starting that discussion, starting that thought process, you can probably get to a point where 3 years from now, you're having a conversation with one or two of those guys that say, yeah, I'm at the stage where I want to expand this. And now I know how it works. And this is a really relatively low risk situation for me to just expand to another geographical area that's, you know, neighboring. And so, yeah, that seems like that could be pretty easy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I want to thank you for coming back on the show and sharing this incredible list that just sparks so much thinking. This is the top 10 franchise opportunities for 2026. And as you said, we can go on and on. But for those out there who want to learn more about it, make sure that you go to John's website, which is called franbridgeconsulting.com, and you can learn all about it. So I'm going to give you the last word. Anything you want to say to the audience?
Yeah, no, it's been a pleasure. Excited about 2026. I think it's going to be a great year for entrepreneurship and business owners, and just so many tailwinds that are coming, and yeah, lower interest rates, a lot of macro factors that I think should bode well. So we're seeing a lot of interest and would love to help any of your listeners.
Fantastic. And ladies and gentlemen, I'll see you on the upside.